Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone. Hello and welcome. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to the Kay and Gus Show. My partner, Gus Henningberg, is a little bit, I don't know why I say under the weather. Why do people say under the weather if you're not feeling well? I've always wondered what the heck that means. But anyway, Gus will be back on Wednesday, and my name is Kay Thompson for the Kay Thompson and Gus Henningberg Show. And we are your news, information, education, and global communications nation broadcasting or blogcasting on Blog Talk Radio. And we're here every Wednesday night, and we are live. So what we're going to do is we're going to invite you to call in on a number that we're going to give at a later date. But right now I'd like to say hello to my son, Eric Payne, out there in California. Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? How's the weather out there?
It's all right. It's a little cool.
It's a little cool out
here. Because I watched the Republican debate last night and watched all those crazy people talk their crazy talk. So,
Oh, boy. What did you think about that, by the way? What did you think about the debate?
Well, I thought it was interesting. It's always good to hear what these people are thinking. But what I'm most, not upset, but just with the thing that kind of just catches me is that you have a black man, Herman Cain.
Mm-hmm.
He said he doesn't like to call himself African American. He likes to call himself Black American. So I'm going to call him what he wants to call himself, a Black American, or should I say a semi-Black American, because here's a guy that stands in front of a group of people that probably mostly don't comprise of people that look like himself, and seems to revel in the attention that he receives. He talks about his 999 plan, and I'm just looking at some information here about the facts of the 999 plan that would raise taxes on the lowest income people. And we know that the majority of people that are in those brackets happen to be black people.
Right.
So here's a black man wanting to come up with what he's calling his new tax plan that he says is going to save people taxes, but in actuality, think tank in Washington, D.C., called the Tax Policy Center, said that it would mostly hurt low and moderate and low-income families.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of black people in the United States fall into those categories. So here's a black man is willing to make life difficult on his own racial group. You might have to dial me back, Mark, because I'm getting ready to call him a sellout. For lack of a better term, but I don't want to come across that mean, but I guess it's okay since he's willing to electrocute people that want to come here just for a better way of life.
I know. Is that the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? You know, it was an embarrassment for him, and unfortunately he's one of the front runners. I don't know how that's happening, but for him to say that, we want to put up a fence and then an electric five fence and then an alligator. That's so ridiculous and foolish. You know, he never should have said that. It just makes him look like an idiot. Really surprised at that. I think he just about alienated everybody that he can, except for the fact that, you know, you have an audience of people there, you know, who like him. You know, it's not that I don't like him. I don't understand the 999. I haven't had anybody, you know, explain that to me yet. And I think that a whole lot of other people don't understand it.
Well, I think what we saw last night is part of the problem is that he doesn't understand it. So, I think the United States has come a long way when you have African Americans in the Republican Party that are rising up, but he's not a Colin Powell type of black Republican.
No,
he's Clarence Thomas, who he says is his hero type of black Republican. He's not a Senator Ed Brooke type of black Republican. He's another type of black Republican who seems to, like I said, revel in that. And let me just point out the information I'm looking up on the internet right now. It says that the Tax Policy Center, a Washington think tank, said Cain's plan would increase taxes on 84% of households, hitting low and medium income households the hardest. The analysis said that households making $10,000 to $20,000 would see whopping tax increases averaging $2,705 an increase of nearly 950%. Now, my question is, what is wrong with that guy?
Well, you know, he's the kind of person that should not be in that particular point. But then again, this is America. Sure, he should be in there. But at the same time, I just don't understand where he's coming from, not at all. Let's go to the Wall Street Movement people. What do you think about them? I like them. I like them, and I like what they're doing, and I like that they're actually out there speaking their piece, and they're not moving, and they're standing, and it's all around the country and the world, and it's about time. What do you think, Eric?
I think it's their right to be out there as well. I think people are frustrated. I think you have, you know, the top, like they say, the top 1% is reaping all the benefits in the country, and the 99% of people in the United States are suffering, are having a hard way to go. And for an individual like Cantor to one day call him a mob and the next day turn around and say just the other day on Fox, well, maybe there's, you know, they have a point, or he backed off calling them a mob. You know, this is where, you know, I want to say what happened to, you know, your father's or our father's Republican Party. I mean, a lot of these Republicans now are just, there's a certain nastiness. There's almost a evilness in their
viciousness. That's
body.
Right.
There's a vicious, that's a much better word, a vicious streak in their party now that is unbelievable. They applaud at people getting executed, just the notion of people getting executed. They applaud at the notion of a man dying because he can't afford health care. They boo a soldier who happens to be gay. They applaud a man who jokes about electrocuting people. There's a sickness in the Republican Party. And I know that they have better Republicans like that, like John Huntsman seems to at least be a reasonable Republican.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a sickness going on in their party. And it's a sickness that they kind of want to spread to United States, you know.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of a, you know, I jokingly to my friends call them the White Citizens Council because some of them act that
That's exactly
vicious.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, another thing that's happening now that, you know, a few people, you know, on talk radio and on the Internet, you know, with blog talk radio, we've been talking about the fact that, you know, what is this business about? You know, you have to have a driver's license or another state-issued ID to vote. A lot of people don't have their information. They don't have their licenses. Some are lost, and they cannot vote. This is going back to the early, early days when, you know, black people couldn't vote, period. So this is exactly what's happening. There is so much money being put into this kind of thing that really it's absolutely dangerous. And I think, you know, a lot more people are going to be rising up in this country about this kind of nonsense.
Yeah, there's a like I said, there's a whole different mentality in the Republican Party now.
Yeah.
There used to be a basic modicum of fair play. Now they seek to change the rules, and if they can't win, they want to change the rules.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make it harder for people to vote, change the rules, make it harder for people who don't have certain forms of ID or might not have certain forms of ID. Like I saw on Reverend Al's show last week about a 94-year-old black lady who couldn't vote. Because
I
they had
know,
changed
I
the
saw
rules
that. Yeah, yeah.
Thing.
And
she had
been
never
voting every single year.
Yeah. So they changed the rules and wouldn't even honor this fact. This poor woman had to go. She was able to go someplace else and vote. But this is what I'm talking about. You don't even have the decency, the God-given decency for fair play. You want to win at all costs. They don't even want, I mean, you know, this is the United States, so we all have to kind of come together and everybody make compromises to live in a united, unified country. But there are some people who have the sickness to think this is their country when they didn't discover it. You can't discover a place where somebody's already living.
Absolutely.
First off, it might be a discovery to you because you're just getting there, but you can't claim it as your own unless you are trying to steal it.
So that
mentality, which some people have fed into to kind of appeal to the worst in some of these people who are rightfully angry about the situation in the United States. A lot of people are doing bets. They're rightfully angry. But
of course,
certain individuals are appealing to the worst aspect of some of those people that might not be as enlightened, might not be as intelligent to understand what really is the problem and what really is what the issues are.
Yeah.
You know?
There seems to be a total change. Anytime you see a group of people, and I'm thinking about now about the Tea Partiers that, remember, they were lined up outside of, what was it, the the building there, the, was it the Melbourne building? What was the name of that building? That they were lined up with the different congressional, the Rayburn building.
Right.
And when a lot of the congressional people, elected officials were coming in, they were spitting at them, and they had all kinds of signs. They had nasty signs of Obama. They even had him looking like Hitler, et cetera, et cetera. So you sort of wonder where they're coming from. And then with the guy with the member of the baseball team, where they were using his music, and with him, you know, with what he was saying, you know, comparing, you know, Obama to Hitler, what is all this about, for God's sake? They're getting ready for a big upheaval with everyone in the country. It's probably time for us to go for a break, Eric, and we will be right back. I'm Kay Thompson. Gus Henningberg is here, but he is a little bit under the weather. Eric Payne is on the phone with me, and the two Tatis are standing by. We're going to be talking to them. And Gina Payne Scott is here in from Virginia, and we're going to be talking to her. We're going to find out about pre-civil rights, about pre-March on Washington. We'll be right back, everyone. Stay with us.
From my party house, I feel like seeing another familiar face to greet and raise a brother. But to my surprise, I find a man corrupt. I thought he'd be my brother, he wants to hold me up. Having hard times in this crazy town. Having hard times.
We're back with Kay and Eric.
Okay. And we are back, everyone. I'm Kay Thompson, and Gus Henningberg is a little bit, I keep having trouble, Gina, with saying under the weather, right? What does that mean? This is my daughter, Gina Payne Scott. She's in from Bermuda. What's going on with Bermuda with the march? Are people in Bermuda aware of, you know, the history of blacks in this country, by the way, Gina?
Well, people in Bermuda are absolutely aware of black history because they're part of black history. Even though they're currently a British territory, you know, their history is basically the same. Years ago, I remember a friend of mine who you met, who actually you had on your show, Kuldeep Singh Chaggar,
who's
a barrister in England. And I remember you asked him on your talk show, was the racism in Great Britain the same? And he made the point that it was the British who actually are the ones, like Eric pointed out, who actually, you know, went out to so-called discoverer place, and they're the ones who actually started all the racism and all the segregation and, you know, the claiming of things. So, yes, Bermuda, absolutely, being a British territory, they have, you know, a similar history. So there were people in Bermuda, my brother-in-law, two of my brother-in-laws actually were involved with the Black Panthers. There was a Bermuda chapter of the Black Panthers.
Wow.
In Bermuda, and of course, every Black History Month, February, which is also celebrated in Bermuda, you know, they do talk about American history, and they tie it into Bermuda history, and Bermuda was involved more so with the labor movement. I don't know, and I don't think that they, then again, they must have had with the segregated, you know, bathrooms and lunch counters and stores and
you weren't there then
and
during that time. You weren't
no, I wasn't there then. Of course not. I was barely alive here at that time. But yeah, they empathize. They're aware of it. They're black.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. You know what I want to go to right now, Eric and Todd and the two Tatis and Gina. Listen, is that memorial service? Now, the memorial service, you know, unveiling the King statue, that was so moving, I thought. And Reverend Al Sharpton really gave a wonderful, wonderful talk. He was telling people to stand up and be counted, which is the kind of thing that, you know, we were always saying on WLIB radio and any other place we had an opportunity to do so. But that service was absolutely fantastic. To see the King statues, I had no idea it was so tall. In fact, I have not been to Washington to see it, but I really want to see it. What do you all think about that?
I thought it was exciting also. I wasn't aware that it was going to be that tall. I'm glad that it's that tall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I mentioned, I was born in 1964. I don't normally say that out loud. However, it's always been a part of the awareness of, you know, the black struggle, the civil rights movement has always been something that we've been aware of and we grew up with because of you, my mother, and, of course, my father being a part of the civil rights movement. Matter of fact, you just showed me a picture, which I have never seen before, with you going to the March on Washington. I know you went, but I've never seen the picture. So with you and Uncle Donald, who's now Congressman Payne, of course. But and I know that my father and you and Mommy were very much involved with that. And I've always been fascinated with the with how black people were treated, first of all, and then, you know, very impressed with the march. And I think that the tribute is timely.
Yeah,
it's past time, but thank goodness it's done now. So.
And Eric, I have to ask you, what were your feelings during that time? I mean, you weren't, let's see, I'm not going to tell your age, but anyway, let me see, the civil rights movement, when was the march in Washington? It was 19 what? Was it 67, 68?
No, he was killed in 1964. Right?
It was earlier than that, right?
Yeah, because you guys were young. And I remember I was there, you know. And as a matter of fact, Gus was working at Urban Coalition at that time. And as a matter of fact, the day before the march, I think it was, Gus was telling me that there was a planning meeting before the march. And the people who were in the planning meeting was Bayard Rustin was there. Philip Randolph was there. He was a close friend of Bayard Rustin's. As a matter of fact, A. Philip Randolph was head of the Sleeping Car Porters Union, and they were in Randolph's office. And what they were doing was, you know, mapping out the time limits and, you know, the structure for who was to speak at a certain time, and Gus was in and out. Now, when he's here next week, you know, he'll be talking about this, at length about, you know, his involvement. But I remember being in the march on Washington, and it was quite an experience. And, of course, I was aware of racism way before then, and it was always a sore spot with me because it made me so angry. It made me so angry that it was, you know, almost hard to put into words. When I went to WIP, I became even more angry because of the racism and because of what was happening to black people in the, the people who were calling in. So it was really
right.
Something, you know. So, but how did you feel about things during that time, Eric, or what you remember as being very young?
Well, yeah, as I look back on it and the historical context of it, I thought it was really a good ceremony. I don't think I caught it from the beginning. Fortunately, I was up early enough out here to see just before the president walked over and began to speak. But I think that what you see now with the Occupy Wall Street thing is people being active as they were back then, you know.
Yeah.
That generation, which is your generation,
mm-hmm.
Got to a point. You guys were handed off movements that were going on within the black community before that. But there was a point where that generation said, if we don't do this, you know, and this is my own personal feeling, if we don't do this, if we don't make these moves right now, who will? You know, and it was just the opportunities that came along to galvanize the movement and to really push it forward. And, you know, people like Dr. King, Martin, Malcolm X, the Kennedy brothers, they paid the ultimate price. And for a very long time, all my life, we've dealt with the issue of race.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to move... Trying to get equality in this country for not only black people, but for all people of color.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but for people, period, everyone should be treated equally under God's green earth. And to have individuals that somehow think that they are superior to people, I guess it's somewhat human nature, but to see how people were caught up and everybody was believing that, or the people that when they saw the brutality that was being perpetrated against people as children.
Yeah, that's the thing that made people very angry.
It brought it home to a lot of people that might not have been involved, a lot of white people that might not have been involved, that said this is not right in our country in that day and age. And to now, all these years later, we have a black president, and it's interesting to me about the luxury that we have to finally get to this point, but then there's people who want to criticize this black president. Then you have people in the opposite party who want to criticize. So, I mean, I know we shouldn't give him a pass because he's black, but when you realize what was the price that was paid.
What about the alternatives?
Yeah, and the alternative, but I'm talking about the price that was paid and the hell that people used to live into, even during the years you were growing up, Mom, before that. The price that was paid by these people. I always wondered why my father was at such, you know, as you know, being married to him, he's got this reputation of being fiery, you know, and you know, people want to call him all kinds of names sometimes. But when I sat down and talked to him and listened to him talk about his experience with Dr. King, it became a little bit clearer to me
why
he had that chip on his shoulder, because he experienced being with this man and watched this man pay the ultimate price.
Absolutely.
In honor to him, in honor to so many other people, countless thousands that we don't even know their names, that just participated or tried to stand up. That's where the fire comes from. That's what gets me to have the chip on my shoulder. So when I see another African American who was around at that time, who went to Morehouse, and I understand.
You're talking about Cain, right?
I'm talking about Herman Cain, and perhaps he couldn't. He grew up the way he grew up, and he's a great American story, and perhaps he didn't want to take that chance to risk his college education. Understood and respected. But you know what? When you get out an opportunity, and maybe through your own hard work and stuff, you've been blessed to do that, maybe you kind of want to look out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a tendency for some people to say, I busted my butt and I worked, so I let everybody else do it. But certainly, you got to understand the situation that people of color have found themselves in this country. So if not all of us are as strong as you, Brother Cain, maybe you can understand. And if you're not going to throw a rope over, at least don't make it harder for those of your kind to get to where you are.
And when you think about all the, and when you think about all the negative, horrible, awful things that have happened, I'm thinking now of Emmett Till. I'm thinking now of all the killings and then the water from hoses, you know, during the civil rights movement with the bus, the kids on the bus and what. I'm thinking about the three people who were killed. I'm thinking about so many people who were hung, okay, and so many people who were killed just because of the color of their skin. And when you think of that, and, you know, if people don't think that there's not that anger there, that anger is there. It will probably never go away. I see books. Yep. I have books now that, you know, will always remind me of that. And you think about people. And then, you know, having been on the air in New York City was really no picnic. Okay, we dealt with New Jersey State Trooper racial profiling, and we're still dealing with it now. And we dealt with, you know, the police officers in New York about the black dolls experiment. Talk about an unhealthy thing. Remember that? Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Clark did that wonderful experiment, and then it was done over again by Derek Hobson. We knew Derek. He and his wife did the same experiment, and lo and behold, you know, you have you know, African-American kids preferring people who are a different color than themselves. And you realize how unhealthy that is?
Yeah.
I wonder if these people ever think of the damage that they have done to one group of people.
Yeah.
You know, and me having interviewed, you know, a lot of African-American scholars like Dr. Ben Yekinen, God bless him, James Brown. Yeah, he's a scholar. He was definitely a scholar. Reverend Al Sharpton, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertimer, Len Gunther, et cetera, et cetera. And we have so many heroes, Rosa Parks, you know, the people that we've interviewed. Nelson Mandela, got a chance to talk to him when I was on WLIB, and I remember we did this show from the Apollo Theater, and I was so overwhelmed by his presence over there at Gracie Mansion that I couldn't even ask the first question. And if Gary Bird is listening right now, he can attest to that. I became absolutely speechless. I don't know if you remember me ever being speechless, Gina. What do you think?
No, I don't remember him ever being speechless, but of course I can imagine, you know, people like that preceding the civil rights movement in the 1960s. In the 1950s, like you talk about, there were people, if you can imagine, take yourself back to a place, you walk outside of your home, and you can't go into CVS without being spit on, without being taunted, without being called names, without being called, I mean, the most foul names, having people stick their dogs on you, chasing you home, having your kids being chased home, possibly being lynched, you being worried every day. And this is every day of your life. And they said, I was watching this movie called We Shall Overcome about the civil rights movement. And they talk about the sequence of events that happened, the Rosa Parks on the bus, the Little Rock integration of the school in Arkansas, Birmingham, talking about Birmingham, Alabama, was the Johannesburg of America.
Mm-hmm.
Being, you know, you're talking about right now, talking about taking out the right to vote and having, like, during apartheid.
Right.
They had pass books to say, I am a man, I'm allowed to walk, you know, I've got permission from somebody to walk out of this settlement into another area. So basically, like you said, Eric, it seems like they're trying to take us back into a time almost like they want to shake out the earth of all the what they consider fleas. It reminds me of even Hitler, the Holocaust. I'm watching the History Channel right now.
Yeah,
you know,
horrible.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like people are less than human. You want to shake out what they consider fleas. And it's the Tea Party people who seem to be this real Bible belt, right wing, you know, hatred. And it's reminiscent of the 1950s.
And on that note, we are going to take another break, and we will be right back. I'm Kate Thompson. Gus Henningberg is here, and he will be back on Wednesday to talk. And Eric Payne is here, and Gina Payne Scott is here, and Ayana and Shauna are there in the studio, along with Tatiana and Tati, and Lisa's listening in. So we will be back for everybody. Please stay with us here on Kay and Gus Show.
Hey, guys, this is Tatiana. I just want to let you guys know that we're experiencing some technical difficulties, so if you can
just help us. Okay. Okay. Listen, we're going to come back with you, okay?
Okay.
All right, so you guys can jump on in. You know, I'll say that I'm going to ask you if you have any questions about that era or that time, or what do you think about it, you know? Okay.
Talking crazy, I just wanna get my baby close to me. Yeah. I made a vow to love you, and it's easy 'cause I trust the baby close to me. I just wanna see you happy, I just wanna make you happy. Won't let nothing in nobody.
And we're back.
Okay.
And we're back, everyone. Kay Thompson, Kay and Gus Show. Gus will be back on Wednesday, and he's going to be talking, and, you know, he's going to be feeling a lot better. And listen, Tati, are you there?
Hi, yeah.
This is my extended family, Ty Washington's daughters. Sean is there, Ayana is there, and Tati. Listen, you guys, now you two are very young. Tell me who is who and how old you are, and what kind of questions do you have or comments do you have regarding this conversation that we're having?
I'm Tatiana, and I'm 16.
I'm Tayana, and I'm also 16. First, before I ask the question, I would just like to say that I'm actually very excited and happy to see the statue, and it's actually, like, it's 30 feet tall, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
What I think is what took so long, like, that's what I want to know. Now they're having a statue of Martin Luther King, like, that should have happened before I was born.
Right. Anything else you'd like to, you know, go ahead.
Well, one question I do have is, well, like, during the Civil Rights Movement, one of the big events was in Little Rock. Those nine students who wanted to go to high school.
Yes.
And it was, I think it's it was nice seeing high school students get involved. And, you know, if you kind of think of Wall Street today, you have college students and, you know, more middle-aged people and stuff. But do you think high school students should get involved? Do you think that will be more effective?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're living in this world. Of course I think that high school students can get involved because of the fact that they live here and they should be aware of the circumstances under which you live. However, you know, let's keep in mind that high schools, you know, when the kids were integrating them, they didn't want black kids coming.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, there was something on television today showing one of the kids who was spat upon, and there was this lady with this very hatred expression on her face who has since apologized to the woman, you know, like some, what, 40, 50 years later? But she realized that she shouldn't have, in other words, she had to live with that photo of herself that was absolutely filled. Her face was filled with hatred. So the high schools did not want to integrate. You know, they were made to integrate. And thank goodness of the Freedom Riders who were there to, you know, see that it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that story was on Morning Joe this morning. You were probably watching the same story. Actually, the young lady in that picture, the white woman, she actually apologized. It was really 4 years later. I mean, that was when they were, like, in high school, like 15, 16. Then about 4 years later, 62, she saw the picture and called the woman to apologize, called the black woman, I forget her name, is to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
She had, 'cause the woman had had kids by that time in her early 20s and realized that she didn't want her children to recognize her in that picture with such a hateful expression on her face.
Mm-hmm,
and,
and
if you saw the whole story, Teddy, you could see the guy who wrote the book about these two women.
I saw
it, to each other, and how he said that they were speaking and then they had a falling out recently and how he hoped that they could come back together. Well, my thing is that it's not on the black woman to reach out, try to come back together. To me, it's always going to be on the white woman to try to come back together because she was the one. If you look at the picture and you feel sorry for this black woman or this black girl at the time, because she got late. She came to school late that day, so
late,
she missed the comfort of going together in the group. So she had to walk through this mob, this bloodthirsty mob, by herself, and she sat at the bus stop and waiting. She had to wait for the by herself. While they were all just taunting her and terrorizing her. And, you can't really blame, to a certain degree, you don't want to blame young people because all they're doing is mimicking behavior that they have learned from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently there were some people, and even some of the newsmen who tried to stay out of the picture, the guy said, were kind of trying to protect this young woman until another white woman came and escorted her on the bus. But, I mean, you know, if you can just imagine that at your guys' age, having to go through something like that where everybody hates you, where you literally have nowhere to turn.
Mm-hmm. Just,
you know,
because
and
of the color of your skin.
Just because of the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to remember thinking sometimes, why do they hate us so much, you know? I mean, I went on a march or two when I was very young with my mother and father, marching Newark and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't make sense. And even some of the prejudice stuff that we would experience and move as we moved to the suburbs of the city of Newark. So, I mean, you know, you would experience stuff like that, and as you grew a little older and you look at people and you let them know that you're not going to stand for that, but it makes you want to get involved, A, but B, you really want to, you don't want to have to live in a world like that where there's such hatred.
And,
you know,
yeah. The one thing I want to say, too, to Tatiana and Tati is, you know, the anger is still there. Okay, now, as old as I am, if you think that I'm still not angry about some of those things, you don't even think that, because, yes, I am. I've seen too much. I have seen, you know, when the police in New York, you know, 541 bullets into, you know, a black man, you know, come on. You know, and I could name numerous other things. Out in Arizona, there was a friend of mine who was with the Indian movement out there, And there, and his two sons were killed by the some police out there. I mean, it's been happening all over the country. It's hard to get that kind of anger out. Is it there? Yes, it probably is. And it probably will always be there because of the fact that I experience it. I experience seeing it on television. I experience people calling about it. I experienced people calling WLIV to complain. They wanted something done about some of the police brutality. They couldn't have it done. You look at, there was a woman called Eleanor Bumbers years ago.
Yeah.
You know, she was killed by a police person, shotgunned. Can
in
you imagine this?
In her
own house.
House.
And there's so many other stories like that. So it,
Amadou Diallo.
Amadou Diallo. Oh, yeah. so many people. Yeah. You know, I was on the air for over 20 years. To be subjected to that kind of stuff, to hear it all the time, and imagine what the people in the South were going through. Think of the Freedom Riders. Think of the people in the South whose parents were brutally murdered. I mean, brutally murdered. You know, so please, you know, just it's still, yeah, the anger is there. It's there. And I'm glad you guys don't have to experience anything like that.
Well,
to get back to that, these movements have always been pushed forward even further along by young people.
That's right.
You know, if you look back, if you ever get a chance to look at some of the old footage from some of you see how young some of the people are that are involved in the marches. Also, that was a strategic choice because they didn't think that these people back in the day were going to arrest children,
mm-hmm.
which they did.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even just the fact that they were active, you know, and what that started was other young people across the country becoming active and joining the fight. So.
The whole group of teenagers, about 30 of them, that were left in jail for weeks on end down there in the South.
Right.
I mean, there's so many stories that haven't even been told yet, you know?
Right. And then you know, other people from across the country, young kids, white, black, whatever, that were getting involved, that were coming down there and wanting to become a part of this movement. So it's always been, for a large part, of young people that have... usually are more open-minded, A, and B, see the future and are a little bit more compassionate to other people. So that's what you're seeing on the Wall Street now. You have a lot of young people that are out there that are marching because really it's your future.
Yeah.
So the world is going to be yours pretty soon.
Well,
so, I mean,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say also, you know, the thought about the world is watching and what really made the civil rights movement take a turn where Lyndon B. Johnson, president at the time, ended up signing the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was after the bus boycotts and the marches in Birmingham and the march across the Henry Pettus Bridge. And I can't recall what other thing was on television at the time, but everyone apparently was glued to their television, and all of a sudden they cut to the scene of these police, the fire dogs, and the police billy clubbing people, and you saw people getting their heads split open, and the fire hoses, they said, would rip your skin off. So you're watching human beings across the country are watching other human beings so hateful, beating people who were peacefully marching, because, of course, Martin Luther King, as you remember, was a nonviolent protester,
mm-hmm.
because he was a reverend, he was a preacher, he was a Christian man.
He was studying Gandhi philosophy.
So,
right?
Exactly. So his whole thing was a nonviolent. So you see these people marching, and they hadn't even made it all the way over to the bridge, and all of a sudden the police start rushing them on on horses with billy clubs and stuff. So the world is watching,
sure.
just like the people are watching in Wall Street right now in the sit-ins. I'm ready to go down and protest, because protest, obviously, it has an effect. It makes it right.
Yeah.
You know, we people around the world, also, I wrote my term paper on apartheid, and, you know, it was for people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing the right thing. They're not a mob. They're a peaceful demonstration. And the media won't dare, I hope, do anything out of the way because, you know, point you made in the beginning, Eric, about the, you know, the 1%.
And now I want to hear from the two Tatis. What do you think, Ty and Ty? T and T?
Well, actually, I have another question for you guys that I would like to ask.
Now, which one is this? Tatiana or...
Tyana,
okay.
Hi. A lot of people in the civil rights movement, Black Power advocates, believe racism still exists. Do you agree?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. You want me to point it out to you?
Yeah, does anyone else want to speak on that and why?
Well, yeah, Myrtle Beach. Myrtle Beach is black guys going into Myrtle Beach in New York, and, you know, there's a group of, you know, white guys, all of a sudden see a black guy, and this was a couple of years ago, or Howard Beach, I'm sorry,
Howard
Myrtle Beach, Howard Beach,
yeah. That was years ago.
Yeah,
but
then
more recently,
happened again. So,
yeah,
there's racism. Of course, it's died down. America's a melting pot, so it's not just blacks. It's people from all over the world.
It's alive and well. Okay, and fortunately, we have people to fight back, though. So when they do that, they take their own lives in their own hands.
We can see how people are talking about the president. Clearly, that's racism.
Yeah.
You know, we were
there's so many people just don't want the president in because he is black.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he could only do but so much. And my Obama, yes, of course, does he do everything right? No, he's not allowed to do that. You know, once you understand politics, you know, you'll see that he can only do but so much. You know, but there's a group of people who don't want him there, but because of the color of his skin. Period. End of story. That's it. It's irrational, and they are. Okay. Are they racist? Yes, they are. Okay.
Well, yeah, also too. You know, it's the funny thing about that, and living in a free society, it's their right to be racist.
Of course,
you know, it's their right. It's their right. And I say, I don't know if we're getting ready to go to a break, but I say, if you want to be racist, okay, we'll talk about it after we come back.
Okay, we'll be right back, everyone. Stay with us. And we are back, the Kay and Gus Show. Kay Thompson, Gus Henningberg, Eric Payne, Gina Payne Scott, Tati Tayana, and Tatiana Washington, Shauna Glover, Ayanna Jones. Did I forget anybody? Ty Washington. Where is Ty?
Yes, he is also feeling under the weather along with us.
Yeah, I have to really investigate that under the weather thing. I don't know where that came from, but yeah, I hope he's feeling well also, so we will deal with that. But really, I want to thank you guys because, I mean, this has been real. I love this. We'll have to do this again. We have so much to learn from our young people. By the way, what are you guys going to be doing when you get out of school, by the way? High school, that is.
Well, college, of course, that's the plan. Hopefully, Boston University. And I was really looking into college, going abroad for college, you know.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And? That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Me, I plan on going to college, American Public University, and then eventually also going abroad to study events.
That's so great. That is so great. Now, is that both of you? Did both of you talk?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, I have a couple of things that I want to tell people, too, and you may want to take advantage of this. We got this in the mail. Lisa sent this in. My other daughter, Lisa Payne, sent this in. African American Resources. Wake Forest University has an opportunity for minority students to attend its MBA program for free. And so far, the response has been very poor. So this says, please pass this along to this opportunity to your friends and family. This is a great school and a tremendous opportunity. Wake Forest University is a great school, tremendous opportunity to attend a top graduate school. Details below, contact Derek Boone, PhD, Associate Professor of Marketing there at the school. That's in Winston-Salem number that you can call, Wake Forest University. Another thing. Black male teachers are needed. Do you know any black males who are seniors in high school who want to go to college out of state for free? Now, this is the Call Me Mister program offered by four historical black colleges in South Carolina, Benedict College, Chatham University, Morris College, and South Carolina State University. So visit the www.callmemister.com, Clemson, you know, that's the website to call. Harvard University is offering free tuition to families of honor students with an income of less than $125,000 per year. So visit their website. Syracuse University School of Architecture is desperately seeking young women and men of color interested in pursuing a 5-year professional degree in architecture. Contact Mark Robbins at the dean of the School of Architecture there at Slocum Hall at Syracuse. And then also, if you have or you know young adults between the ages of 18 to 31 with a high school diploma, they can learn up to $100,000 and earn benefits. And this is with the federal, get this everyone, the Federal Aviation Association, because they're taking applications for air traffic controllers. Okay? So visit that site, the Federal Aviation Association. You can earn up to $100,000 a year. Of course, you will be properly trained. My goodness. And we will be giving out a lot more information. This is the kind of thing that I used to do on WLIB, and I will be contacting, different schools for more information to give you. There's a lot of money out there, everyone. So make sure you take advantage of the different scholarships that can come your way. Contact your sororities and your fraternities. They have people there that can also give you a lot of information. Contact your schools, your high schools, your guidance teachers. Contact your teachers. And if a teacher refuses to give you information, let me know. Give me their name. We'll talk about them. So thank you, guys.
Listen, ask people to hit you up on Facebook. See if you're enjoying the show, the Kay and Gus show. I know you're getting a lot of information, and I am. I always enjoy listening to my mother because her information is out of this world. And I know that if you're listening, hit her up on Facebook, Kay Thompson, and also tell your friends about the show. Spread the word about the Kay and Gus show so that we can spread the information.
I had a lot of fun talking about this. I actually enjoyed myself.
I'm so glad. Are you gonna do this again?
Yes, young people need to get educated, and this is a good, healthy, intellectual conversation that we can all benefit from.
Yes, yeah, and it's so good to have you on. We will do it again and again and again because I love it, I love it, I love it. You know, there's so much information that you guys have, and you get right to the heart of things because you were right there with kids your age.
Right.
And we really have to know exactly what you want and how we can make ourselves better. If you become better, then we also, maybe we can get rid of some of the anger. It's going to take a long time with me. I'm going to tell you right now, I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Young people have a lot to say.
And you have the right to say it.
And so far we're getting close to that by the Wall Street. Occupying Wall Street.
I'm so glad they're there. And I'm so glad Russell Simmons is out there.
I think
and a number of other people. Yeah. I'm glad that Reverend Al is out there. I'm glad that Tavis Smiley and Cornel West, even though I don't agree with them at times, I'm glad they're there. And Tom Joyner and all my other folks that I happen to know, including Wendy Williams. You have to develop a sense of humor. Once you do that, then maybe the anger goes away a little bit. But listen, thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thanks for everybody tuning in. And the number for you to call next time is 323-679-0906. That's a heck of a time to give the number out right now, isn't it?
Well, the conversation was so interesting. What's your Facebook address?
Facebook address is, what is it, Kay Thompson. That's spelled K-A-E, and then Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, and invite you to... what do you say? Give me what?
Hit me up on Facebook.
I don't want people really hit me. Hit me up on Facebook. Is that what we say, Tatiana and Tati?
Yes. Young
hit
people.
Me up on Facebook.
Hit me up on Facebook. Eric, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I just wanted to remind people not to forget about BW Moving Images.
Yes.
And if anybody wants to produce their own radio show, the BW Moving Images is the place to do it.
And documentaries and everything. Oh, man.
If you need help with anything, if you want to start anything, this is the place to come to. I've been helping out, working here for many years. I've seen so many people get so far with just one idea, and it's amazing how one idea can go so many places and inspire so many people.
Well, we wouldn't be on Blog Talk Radio without BW Moving Images and without Tylon Washington and Shauna Glover and Ayana Jones and Tati and T2.
For those listening, you guys, for information, you can go to blackwax.com. That's BLACKWAXX.com.
Sure.
And you can also check us out on Twitter.
Facebook,
twitter.com/BW Moving Images. With an S at the end, and you can check us out on Facebook and YouTube.
Yes,
so worldwide.
Until next time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Kay Thompson.
Well, yes. Okay, and we're back, and it's Tatiana, Tiana, and Eric. Kay had to go, but the three of us will be ending the show for you tonight. Eric?
We'll be around for another couple of minutes. Now, I want to ask you guys, have you guys ever seen the speech, the I Have a Dream speech in its entirety? And if you have, what did you think about that?
I know about it. I haven't read it.
Yeah, I have never, I have never seen it. It's on my list, my to-do list. But I know the basic idea of what he was saying.
You need to, but if you get a chance to watch it, and, you know, you guys work in the visual media, so you know how powerful images are.
Right.
And if you really understand that at that time, Martin Luther King was a young man. He was in his late 20s,
right?
Which is also a remarkable thing. But when you see this man speaking and see him talk about his dreams for America and things about him, and he's a preacher too, so there's that aspect, but you really feel that he believes this. You really feel that these are things that he hopes for this country, he hopes for the future of his children. And just the eloquent way that he puts these words together is really remarkable, which was really a big part in how he moved so many people when he spoke. I'm convinced if you see one of his last speeches, jumping forward to one of his last speeches before he died, that he had a premonition. And if you see the look in his eyes when he talks about, I might not get there with you, but I know that we as a people will get to the promised land. I am convinced that this man knew something was going to happen to him, and that he was sent from God. So you should, if you get a chance, I urge you guys and any other young people to watch him speak.
Right.
Watch the video of the speeches.
Actually, right now, real quick before we end, we have a part of the speech that we would like to play.
Yeah.
Great. So,
let's listen.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to us tonight.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. It was great talking with you, Gaul.
I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. In history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a red beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. the same as the joyous daybreak, to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize the shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to whichever American was to fall heir. This note was a promise of yes, black men as well as white men. The big out.
Okay, wow, that was very powerful. Yeah, I definitely want to get to finish that later, and I can see just the way he, you know, stood and the way he delivered his words. I definitely am going to finish that later.
But actually, that's all we have for today on the Canada
yes.
Show.
Unfortunately, let's go.
Are you still
all right? Working? Good night.
Good night.
Yes.
Don't forget to tune in next Wednesday. Kanga
next
Show.
Wednesday, that's right.
8.
And for those listening, you can check us out on blackwax.com. That's blackwax.com. And on Twitter.com/BWMovingImages.
Right. And
thank
you can check
you.
Out the Kanga Show on Facebook
and YouTube.
Thank
yes.
you,
Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Take care. See you guys next week.
Everybody. Okay, see ya.
Bye-bye.
Did you know?